Well, it's great to be with you here today. I am so honored to be a part of this weekend here at all of our churches everywhere, watching all around wherever you're watching this from. One of the biggest reasons it's such a big honor for me is that I've known Pastor James and Pastor Mike for a long time, and my wife and I have been pastoring a church up in the Inland Empire, Corona area. If you don't know where the Inland Empire is, it's that place that you drive through when you're going to Vegas to get your freak on. And so you drive right through there real quick, usually. But we had been experiencing such a great opportunity to see lives that were being changed. And as our church began to grow and our ministry that we had been leading, we've been there for about 8 years, we were looking for some help to figure out what to do next. And Pastor Mike and Pastor James began to open up just kind of, hey, here's what we've seen happen at our own church, and here's the things that have been happening all around our ministries and our campuses. And so it's an honor for me and my wife to be here this weekend, just because you may not know this here, going to this church. You may not know how big of an impact you've had, but your impact as a church is so massive because we were able to take the things you guys were doing as a church that you sacrificed for, that you gave to, that you got into growth groups, and you did Christmas Conspiracy, and these were ideas that really moved our hearts so much. We took them back to our church, and as our church began to grow, we were able to implement the very things that you guys were doing and sacrificing and giving to. And so it's a huge honor to speak for Pastor Mike and Pastor James and to be with you guys, just because you may not know who Bill is, but Bill had never been to church for years and years and years, and never thought church was something that would ever be for him. And he was someone who ended up coming, and him and his wife gave their life to following Jesus, and ended up even opening up their home to host a growth group, which is something we only knew how to really do to reach people, other people in our city maybe weren't ever going to reach. People that wouldn't normally go to church were now starting to come to ours in our area because of the things that your church did. And you may never meet who Shalini is, but Shalini grew up as a Hindu, and she learned the ways of Jesus at our church, and she was warmly welcomed in, and she began to be a part of us before she really believed all of what we believed, and eventually came to give her life to following Jesus as well. These names are not people you may never meet. You may ever meet, but I want to tell you that it's an honor for us to be here, because if it wasn't for you as a church and what you've given to, what you've sacrificed for, what you've served, what you've created, those lives wouldn't be impacted, and thousands more just like them. And so thank you so much for being who you've been. And I guess a big thank you also to Pastor James, Pastor Mike, for all they've helped us learn. And so I want to take a moment, if you let me. I'd like to just pray. It's part of my custom when I travel and speak to just pray and ask God to help me do my best to share the things he's laid on my heart. So I want to invite you, if you're okay with that, to bow your heads and close your eyes and just say a word of prayer with me. Jesus, I thank you so much. It really is a massive privilege for me to stand on this stage and to speak to these people and to speak to all of the people all around watching wherever they're at all the different churches and online. And I would pray that today you would speak through me, that you would make it clear to everyone here, no matter what they know, how much they know about you, how much they've learned or how long they've been in church, but would they come across clear today that you are speaking to them through the things that you give me to say. I pray that it would feel like this message was tailor-made for them, as if you knew they were going to be here today. And I pray that as they leave, they would feel encouraged knowing that there is a God who knows right where they are, knows where they're going, is going to do all he can to help them be who it is that he wants them to be. Would that come across today as we hear today from this message? And I pray that you would do all those things today. I lastly want to also just say thank you in a spirit of gratitude. I just want to thank you for helping the Golden State Warriors go up 3-1 over the Cavaliers, and I would pray that you would help them. May Draymond not get suspended. You know that was accidental, and LeBron's a little bit of a crybaby, and so just let that just kind of just be what it needs to be. Let the truth set the Warriors free. On a Monday night, may they become back-to-back champions. To your name, Jesus, I pray this, and everybody said, amen. Amen. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about myself before we speak today. My name is Chris, and I grew up in the Bay Area of San Francisco, and so my life, I got a chance to learn a lot of different things, a lot of different cultures and diversities, and it was wonderful, and I really love that about me in terms of my journey and story, because I needed it when I fell in love with my wife before we were married. I would need those experiences, and let me explain what I mean by that. See, growing up for me, my best friend's names were not Jeremy or Timothy or Johnny. Those were not my friend's names. My friend's names growing up were Jamal, Jerome, Jarrell, Laquan, Jose, Guadalupe. Okay, those were my friends. So I grew up a little bit, you know, from what you might see looking at me, my friends and the mix of people I was around was a little different, which actually I ended up needing when I met my wife, and I wanted her to love me. And so, you know, I wanted that to happen, and it was going to be a little different. And part of that is because of my background. See, I'm half Mexican. I know that you may not look at me and think that. Both my parents were white, but because I married Brenda, and Brenda's a Mexican, her family claimed half of me and said, "We got half of you now, S.A." So I knew I had to get my future father-in-law to approve of me, but it was weird because he had this nickname for me. He would always call me Gringo, right? And I didn't know. I thought I was the only one that got that nickname. Come to find out, many of you have that nickname in this room. And many of you watching everywhere you're at, every church, you have that nickname too. And so he would always look at me and see, "Here, let me help you real quick. If you are single today and you're like, I think I want to marry a Hispanic woman. Well, man, God bless you, okay? And that's a great idea. But I want to help you with that just so you understand a little bit more about what that might mean for you. If you're single, especially if you're a white guy, and you're thinking, I want to marry a Hispanic woman, that's great, that's fine. But there's only one problem with marrying a Hispanic woman. Every Hispanic woman has a Hispanic father. Okay? And they look like this." Okay? And so when I began to, you know, pursue Brenda, we were dating, I tried to do all I could to get her father to approve of me, and he wouldn't. He would look me straight in my face, and when I would talk or try to relate to him or connect with him, he would look at me, and I'm not lying to you. I mean, this is the face. He would make a face, and it looked like he, and he'd go like this. "No bueno, gringo." And then he'd walk away. And I tried everything. I sat down and watched novellas with him. I mean, if you don't know what a novella is, by the way, let me help you a little bit. I'm going to do a little cross-cultural illustration and understanding here. Let me educate all the people. See, I grew up in, obviously, the house I grew up in, we watched white people soap operas, okay? And they were like Days of Our Lives, and like the guys would like have 19 girlfriends, and like the girls were always crying, and it was just like, man, this is a lot of drama for a Thursday morning, Mom. Like, turn it to Oprah. But like, you know, at least she's giving away cars. Like, so that's kind of the deal. Well, see, when you watch a novella, it's like it's a different kind of soap opera. And it goes a little bit more like this. The guy comes to the door. He's like, knocks on the door. "Maria? Roberto? Mi amigo? Mi novia? Por qué?" And I was like, man, the guys cry in the novellas more than the girls. That was weird for me, okay? So I'm sitting next to my future father-in-law, and he's crying, and I'm like, oh, I'm just kidding, here's a tissue. You know, like, it was so different. And he would look at me, "No bueno, gringo." And he'd walk away, and I'm like, man, I don't know what to do. And he had this real weird thing he always wanted me to do. He always wanted me to pinch him, and I didn't get that because he would always tell me, "Pinch me, gringo." And I really didn't really understand. I didn't understand that.
I'll explain it later.
And I knew I had to do what a man has to do. See, when you fall in love and you know this is the girl for you, a man, he'll pull out all stops. He will do whatever it takes to get the girl he wants. And I had to go there, y'all. Some of you know what I'm talking about. That's right. Tapatio. Oh, yeah. Man, the first time he slid it over to me, I thought, oh, okay, it's like Tabasco sauce. Put it on. It lit my mouth up. I knew there was a hell just based on the fire in my mouth. And he looked at me, and he laughed at me in Spanish. And I was like, man, I got to get a handle on this. I knew he would never respect me if I couldn't handle it. So you guys, I went into like off-season training, okay? I put Tapatio on everything I ate. Eggs, Tapatio. Cinnamon toast, Tapatio. Chocolate milk, Tapatio. I put Tapatio on everything I ate, and I finally came. It was go time. I was ready for it. I got together. It was Christmas. The family stood around. He came walking out. You could hear him because he had a big belt buckle and a ranchero hat, and then he had these boots with, like, spurs on him. He was like, shing, shing, shing. And he comes walking in, and I'm like, oh, this is intense. All the tamales had been homemade, and now we were, like, in a big old pot ready to eat them. He comes in. They pray. We sit down, and he slides over the Costco-sized version of Tapatio. And he snickers at me like, huh, and I'm all, huh. I take that bottle, I was like, psh. Ah, shh. And he goes, huh. And he looked at me, he goes, welcome to my familia, amigo. Welcome to my familia. And he got up, hugged me, and he cried on my shoulder. It was a beautiful moment. And my wife is actually here at this service real quick, so I want to show you. This is a picture of me and my wife, this is me, that's Brenda. That goes to tell you that if you pray enough, guys, you can get somebody prettier than you're good looking, okay, right there. So there you go. And my wife and I, we were blessed. For 3.5 years, we were not able to get pregnant. And so we prayed and prayed and we were at a conference in Texas and a pastor prayed for us. And 2 weeks later, we were gifted with that little girl. That is my 6-month-old Eliana. So there she is. Sorry. I just love her. So I'm a first time dad, you guys. I'm just like, I can't look at a big picture of her and not laugh. She said dada 2 days ago for the first time ever. I am wrapped, you guys. It's over for me. Here's the reality, though. Like, I didn't know the unwritten rules with my father-in-law. He had these rules, these things that I wanted his love. I wanted him to approve of me, accept me, welcome me into his family, and make me a part of his own life. And I wanted to know all the things that I could get from being connected to him, specifically, of course, knowing his daughter. And this is not so unlike some of the things that many of us are going through even today, is there seems to be in life these invisible rules, these unwritten rules that you, if you were to know them, they would make life so much easier for you. Some of you right now, you're going through such a tough marriage situation and nobody knows it right now. You and your wife, you and your husband, you're in a marriage right now that is going through a real tough time and no one could tell. In fact, even right now, the people sitting next to you, in front of you, behind you, have no idea there's this thing between the two of you and you don't even talk about it that much. Maybe it's been a week, 2 weeks, a month, maybe even years. Where it's just this invisible thing, and you're like, man, if I could know the unwritten rules of what it would take to fix this, I'd do it right away, but I don't know how to access that wisdom or that forgiveness or that next place in our marriage, and we're stuck. We don't know how to get that, you know, that knowledge, and we wish we did, and maybe for some of you, it's not so much that you're married, you could be single, but you're just in a position where you just feel hopeless maybe, super lonely. It's hard at times to go home and you're in a house or a bedroom or a room you're renting or a dorm room all by yourself, or you're out in the military and you're serving, you're like, I'm away and am I ever going to find someone that I can share my life with? And is it always going to be like this? And that's one of the hard things. And it's like, if I just knew, what is the thing I don't know? What am I supposed to do with my life? Am I supposed to study this, go to this college, take this class, take this job? Should I be dating this person, not dating this person? There's so many big decisions that seems like need to be made, and it's overwhelming. And it's like, there's got to be an unwritten rule of wisdom or an unwritten rule of what's going on and what do I do about it. If I knew it, it would change everything. Maybe some of you today, it would be, I have a personal issue, like an addiction or a personal life struggle that just owns you. It just has your name. And you just wonder, am I always going to be like this? Will I ever overcome this? Or will this always just be a part of what defines me? And is there something I don't know, either about me, about God, about truth or church or the Bible or whatever, that if I were to know that, it would help me get over this and get through this, and I could actually be different. And when we don't know these things, they're so overwhelming, and it certainly also comes, lastly, it comes even into our relationship with God, where we start to wonder, is there something that I don't know about you, God, that if I were to know it, it could change my life? Is there something you feel towards me because I've messed up so bad, and you're looking at me like, man, if you would have just not been like that, not done that, things could be better, but now you're there, and you almost feel like God is upset at you, like you blew it so bad, like you don't even know how to earn your way back into his good graces. You don't know what to do. You're like, if you would tell me, or someone would tell me, I'm here today even, not even a church person, not even a believer in Jesus, I'm just like looking for something to help me learn, what do I have to do to untap that mysterious world of wisdom, of what maybe the old writers in the Bible would call God's blessing, or the favor of God. Like, how do I get that into my marriage, into my singlehood, into my decision-making, into my addiction, into my issue, into my finances, into my life? How do I do it? And the great thing about Jesus is that he did not want this to be a mystery to us. He knew we were going to go through this stuff. And that's why he put into the Bible the very stories that are in there that actually speak right into our current realities. And so today I want to take the camera lens of Scripture and zoom it right on in on a few different places where Jesus is talking specifically about how do we manage, how do we tap into this invisible world of God's wisdom, of truth, of relationship with him, or how's it work? What do I got to do? Is there stuff I've got to do that if I knew to do it, I could change my life? How's that all go? And we're going to look at that today. As you know, we've been in a series called First Person, and over the last many weeks, we've been talking through the account of Mark. Mark was one of the gospel writers, and he wrote specifically a very shorter version of the gospel. The reason for that is he was telling stories about miracles, the miracles of Jesus. And so once a miracle kind of happens, that's kind of the end of the story, and it would move on to another miracle story and move on to another miracle story. So over the last couple weeks, we talked about the power of Jesus. The power of Jesus is what we were talking about. Is, okay, this is where we see Jesus' power. So Mark shows us the power of Jesus. Today we're going to begin a transition and start looking over the next couple weeks through Matthew's scope and his lens of it. He is going to talk a little bit differently than Mark does. As Mark did the power of Jesus, Matthew's going to talk to us about the principles of relationship. He's going to talk to us about life choices. He's going to talk to us about how to interact with God. He, maybe what we could say is, he's going to talk to us about the wisdom of Jesus. How do we understand the wisdom of Jesus? And that's what Matthew is going to offer us today. And so if we could zoom in on just Matthew chapter 5, this is where Jesus is going to introduce what he calls a new kingdom. So he's going to come in with some new ideas, a new vision, a new idea, a new quote. If you're in the business world, a new product is going to be released. He's coming to a world and saying, hey, I've got something new we're going to do here. And so now everyone's like, okay, what is this new thing? And so Jesus is going to introduce in Matthew chapter 5 kind of the Magna Carta of his whole new kingdom. He's going to have 5 different sermons. This is one of them. And he goes, here, right here, this is what the new kingdom is all about. And I want you to pay attention closely, especially if you're someone who hasn't been in church for a long while, because I want you to see the heart of Jesus. And then those of you that have been in church, and church is a big part of your life, I want you to look at this as if you know what you know about Jesus. Like, I know Jesus and the Pharisees didn't really get along, and watch what happens as this unfolds, because it's going to come across, I think, very like alarming. Like, wait, Jesus, what are you getting at? Like, where are you going? Let's watch what he has to say. It says this in Matthew chapter 5, verse 20. Jesus says, but I warn you, unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of the religious law and the Pharisees. And these guys were these were rule follower type people. They followed all the rules, wanted to always be holy, righteous people, looked down at everyone who couldn't do it as good as them. He says, unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Never enter the kingdom of heaven? That's heavy. Jesus is telling us, wait, you mean to tell me I don't have to just match where the Pharisees are, and they're super like religious, holy, righteous, wear the right thing, go to church all the time. They just look the part, act the part, talk the part, walk the part. And they're all sitting there, and we know, those of us that have read the Bible a little bit, we know famously that the Pharisees don't really like Jesus, and they know Jesus comes in, and he upsets their control system to basically say, we're in, you're out, we're good, you're bad, we're close to God, you're far from God, we're accepted by God, you're rejected by God, you need to be more like us so God will approve of you the way he approves of us. And so when Jesus comes in, he actually starts speaking about opening up the door to everyone who wants to come to know God through him. They don't really like that. Which ends up being what leads them to killing Jesus. Well, that, as a backdrop, really makes this interesting, because this seems, from the outside looking in, if you're just glancing at this, this almost sounds like Jesus is agreeing with the Pharisees. He's kind of raising the bar, if you will. Jesus, and he does. Jesus raises the bar. He's like, you've got to surpass their righteousness. You've got to be better than their righteousness to get to the kingdom of heaven. And he keeps going. Matthew chapter 5 verse 21 says this: you have heard that our ancestors were told that you must not murder. If you commit murder, you are subject to judgment. But I say that if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell. I don't know about you, but man, when I read that, I'm thinking, man, I know some of my reactions to some of the drivers out there in Southern California. And as I consider my own reactions, I'm thinking, does anyone else in this place right now or watching, does anyone else feel like you got a one-way ticket to hell? Like, I don't know. I'm just like, dang, man, I called five people an idiot just getting down to church to preach here today. I'm done, man. I'm like, well, see y'all in hell. Like, I'm not going to make it. So it's interesting, because here we look at and we listen to Jesus' words, and it's like, it seems like he's making it harder on everyone else. And he backs it up with this one. You have heard the commandment that says, verse 27, you've heard the commandment that says you must not commit adultery. Now, let me stop for a minute and just say, it doesn't really matter today where you come out on the faith spectrum, whether you've been following Jesus for all of your life, or you're today or like, hey, I'm not even a self-identified Jesus follower, Christian, believer, Bible reader, whatever that idea would be. That's not even me. I'm just kind of looking for something, or I'm a guest of a friend, and you're just here to kind of like see what this could be. No matter where you're at, I think that you and I could all agree that adultery is a damaging, devastating thing in any relationship. And even, you don't have to believe in God to think that adultery is a bad thing, that it destroys relationships, that is the ultimate betrayal, and it devastates lives. And so I think that we could all agree with Jesus' words here, regardless if you think Jesus is who he says he is, you still can say, yeah, it's a virtuous idea that adultery is something we shouldn't do. But he continues on and says this: but I say, anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. I mean, Jesus seems like he is piling on here. I mean, I'm sitting there listening to this like, man, Jesus, like, who could do it? Who could pull this off? And here you go. This is like the cherry on top. He's not done. He wraps it up with this one. Verse 43, this is not on the outline, but it's going to come up on the screen. You could write this reference down and look it up later if you will. But it says this in Matthew 5, 43 through 44. You have heard the law that says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Jesus, again, here he goes, raises the bar. But I say, love your enemies and pray for those who are actually doing wrong and persecuting you. Jesus is upside downing this thing. So he's now bringing stuff up that people got to be sitting there thinking, I thought you said this was going to be a new kingdom. This sounds like the Pharisees. It just sounds like someone who's like the best Pharisee in the world, making everyone else feel like the biggest loser because no one can measure up to that bar. But is that what Jesus is doing? I present to you today, not at all. In fact, he's doing the opposite. See, he knows the hearts of these religious leaders are always looking down and casting this judgmental feel and vibe towards everyone who doesn't, quote, measure up to where they think they are. What Jesus is doing is actually brilliant. Jesus is coming to them, and he is saying to them, you Pharisees think you're so much better than everybody else. You think you've got it all down. You've been in church long. You wear the right robes. You say the right prayers. You do all the right things. But this is what I want you to know. You might think, well, at least I don't kill like they do. At least I don't commit adultery like they do. At least I haven't done the real bad stuff. And what Jesus is saying is, actually, the playing field is totally level. Jesus levels the playing field and says, all of you are just as in need of being forgiven by a God who loves as anyone. Jesus levels the playing field. So for any of us in this room today that I'll just speak to those of us that we would identify as a Christian or a Jesus follower. If you're unfamiliar or not comfortable saying I'm a Christian, you follow Jesus with all your life and you've put your trust for your salvation. When you die, you're not thinking, I'm going to get to be able to be okay in heaven with God because I was a good person. You're like, no, I'm never going to be a good enough person to qualify for perfection. I'm going to have a few things that knock me out of perfect heaven. So I'm going to need a perfect like lawyer and I need someone to cover me. And so you've said, Jesus, I put my trust in you and your perfection. If you're in this place or you're watching online or you're watching at a church somewhere and that's where you're at, let me just speak to you for a second. Even you would know and be able to say right now, I am just as in need of saving as the next person. Even if I haven't committed adultery, even if I haven't murdered anyone, I want to make sure I never get to the place where I think that, well, those people really need Jesus. I grew up in a church that I used to hear people say that, like, well, we need to pray for sister so-and-so. We need to pray for, you know, them. They need Jesus. They need Jesus. And I was, as I got older, I always was struck by the phrase, they need Jesus. What do you mean they need Jesus? Who is this they that needs Jesus? Does that mean it supposes that you've arrived at a place where you no longer need Jesus like you think you used to? Like there's someone else who needs saving and forgiving and loving and redemption and joy and hope and all those things more than me. In fact, I would present the day we get to a place as believers in Jesus where we think someone else needs Jesus more than we need Jesus, we don't know how bad we actually really need Jesus. Because we've gotten to the place where we've elevated ourselves and Jesus comes in and says, nope, you're just as bad if you've even looked at her. You're just as bad if you're angry. You're just as bad if you are cursing them out. It's equal. So here's what that does. It says that statement where he goes, hey, you can only get into the kingdom of heaven if you're better than even the best. And guess what that just did? It disqualified every single human being because no one can be perfect. What is Jesus doing? He's not just leveling the playing field. He has constructed the most giant, flashing, neon light sign that is an arrow, and it's pointing at Jesus. What's Jesus doing? Jesus is pointing to himself. He's saying, I alone can meet those standards. I alone can do righteousness better than the Pharisees. I alone will be innocent and righteous to the point where I am better and I can get into the kingdom of heaven. And this is what's great. The Pharisees want to keep you and I out. Religious people want to keep you and I out, but Jesus, the Son of God, comes in and says, I'm the only one who's got the key to get into the thing, and guess what I'm going to do? I'm throwing the mother of all kickbacks, and I'm opening up the doors. Everybody can come on in if you just come through me. He opens it up to us and says, I'm pointing to me as your way to having a right relationship with God, of getting wisdom you don't know how to do on your own, of getting your marriage to heal, of getting faith and hope towards your future and your direction, of getting financial peace in a disaster, of healing from something that's been done to you, of overcoming a personal addiction or a personal life issue. They're like, how could I? Where's the mysterious wisdom? Or as the Bible writers might have called it, blessing, or they would say the favor of God. How do I get, what do I have to do? And Jesus says, you can't do anything. You can't go get it for yourself. You can just receive it from me as a gift of grace. So what this means is that you and I stand shoulder to shoulder with every single person out there. At the foot of the cross where we meet Jesus' sacrifice that qualifies us, where he exchanges his perfection for our imperfection, and we could accept that. The phrase that maybe we could say is, the ground at the foot of the cross is level. Nobody needs Jesus more. Nobody needs Jesus less. Here's the ticket. We just need Jesus different. I don't need Jesus more than you, and you don't need Jesus more than me. I need him different than you. The reasons I need forgiveness, the reasons I need redemption, the reasons I need grace, the reasons I need mercy, the reasons I need hope, the reason I need love, the reasons I need all of the things he provides me are just different than the reasons you need it. But they're not worse and they're not better. When we can understand that, it allows us to extend grace and extend the type of relationship and get through things that are otherwise too big for us, and we'll never do it enough to get it. We have to connect at it, not through rules, but through relationship with Jesus. Personally, in my own life, this has been something that I've gone through even just recently. My mom and I, we've always been very close. And my mom, you know, was in church a lot growing up and all the rest. But as I grew up, and this is something that, you know, she knows I share, and she's given me permission to share as a part of her journey and story because it impacts my life. And my mom, as I grew up, my mom was a drug addict, and my mom had a hard time ever really kicking drugs. And there was times I remember catching her doing them, and drugs were around our house when I was younger. And as a result, as you can imagine, that really affected at times different dynamics of our relationship. And we were kind of estranged for years where we didn't talk at all. And there was just this distance between mother and son. My mom, you know, always believed in God, always knew God. She actually knew the Bible really well and loved God, and even was in church, used to sing and all the rest, but just never could get that out of her path. And 4 years ago, after another relapse, my mom had spent 15 years doing great and then had a couple years that didn't go so well, and for the last 4 years have been doing awesome. And she's incredible. She's a mighty person in the things of God, but she also knows that she has to continually walk the walk of recovery. And as you might imagine, that estranged us. And so it was one of those things where God had to reteach me as a son that, Chris, you stand shoulder to shoulder with your mom in front of God, needing forgiveness and redemption just as bad as each other. Your mom doesn't need it more, and you don't need it less. And I was able to grant forgiveness and relationship. And so last week, a very close friend and a mentor of mine made it possible for us to be able to go to game one of the Warriors finals game. And the person that I chose to take, and God, you know, moved on me, and my wife really was the heartbeat behind this as well, was my mom. And this was just a picture of me and my mom at the Warriors game, and just, we went. And that picture to you right now is, is a brand new picture to you, but it's also a brand new picture to me. And let me tell you what that picture represents. That picture represents me and mom. No matter what mom has been, hasn't been, me and mom stand shoulder to shoulder, both before God, saying, we need you. We might need you different, but we need you the same. We need you the same, even though we need you different. I need you equally. Even though it is reasons that are different, it is still equal in terms of the magnitude of why we need forgiveness and love and hope and redemption. And so how can you today take this home for you? I might ask you, is there anyone in your life today that, and it happened in my life, but is there anyone in your life maybe that is just a few notches down from where you are? Just because they've hurt you and they've let you down, and it's easy for you to be like, they're the ones that need Jesus. I'm here, but they're there. And maybe today Jesus' word to you would be, hey, I think it's maybe time for you to work through letting me, not you doing it on your own, letting Jesus come in and give you the strength, you the perspective, you the wisdom to be able to say, no, let's stand shoulder to shoulder and let's work on our relationship with God's help. Let's get that. And or maybe today you would say, it's not so much you and another person, it could be you and God. And today you would say, man, I'm not in right standing with God. I didn't know he loved me like that. I actually always felt like I was bad. And maybe you grew up in a church that was just real condescending, or you always felt bad and, you know, you just never could get it right. And you're like, man, I always kind of just had this premonition that God was upset at me. And today you've realized, no, Jesus leveled the playing field to invite you in, that you're included, that you're not on the outside looking in, that he did everything he did for you, and you're not worse than, you're equal as me and everyone else who's ever messed the thing up. And he says to you, hey, I want to forgive you, and you don't have to be perfect for me, because I was perfect for you. And that's the deal. You don't have to be good enough for Jesus. Jesus was good enough for you. And so I'm going to say a prayer right now. And if you're here today and you would say, I don't want to put my trust in how good of a person I am, because I know my good will never be good enough. I want to put the trust for my future, for my now on earth, and even after earth, for eternity. I want to place that in Jesus' love and his gift to me to be better than anything else, and to say, I'll never get there, but you went there for me, and I now accept that grace from you. And if that's you, well, as I pray, would you make this prayer your own? I want to invite you to bow your heads and close your eyes today. Jesus, we pause for a moment and reflect upon these words from the scripture and from the Bible, God, that speak to our soul. And God, they call out things in me, I know in my own life, of things that I've gone through, things that I feel towards you at times, and I forget that it's through connection with you I overcome the stuff. It's through connection with you and relationship with you I get wisdom I need. It's my connection to you that gets me through the things that are not fair, not right, not easy, not clear. And I pray today for those of us that have a connection with you, that we would today be reminded again That it's not what we go do that's going to get us through. It's God, who we know and who we're connected to. God, that's what helps us to overcome what we're facing today. Would you give us that wisdom through our relationship with you and reignite that again today in the area we need it most. For my friends today that would be here and would say, Jesus, I don't have a personal relationship with you, but I want one today. I realize that I don't have the ability to ever get good enough to qualify for perfection, for the standard of God, but I don't have to because God, he did that for me. And today, if that's you today, this could just be your prayer, and we would just say to you, Jesus, together, that we need you and your forgiveness, that we thank you for your love, and we thank you that you gave your life for us, and we now turn our life and surrender or give our life and just give it over to you and say, we want to now follow your ways and learn your ways and get connected to the people who are doing it as well. Would you do that in the lives of those today, God, who need it and want that? God, I pray that you would continue to show us, God, how to live out this life as we leave today, to show people the very wisdom of connecting with you is what we need. It's not what we do. It's not being good enough for ourselves. Jesus, you're good enough for us. We just need to connect with you. And from that divine place, we'll get all the strength we need to overcome what we're facing. Do that in our lives today, I pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you for letting me be with you today, church. See you again.